Right now, we're going to talk about the subject of climate change and global warming. We're going to talk with a scientist named Gregory Wrightstone, and he's written a new book, which is called Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and it is great to have you on the program, Mr. Wrightstone. And tell us a little bit about your own background scientifically.
Yeah, I'm a geologist. I've been practicing and looking at various aspects of the Earth's history and paleoclimate for more than 35 years. I've become passionate about the subject of climate change. And just to let your listeners know, I didn't set out to write a book. I set out to seek the truth because I heard things that I just knew as a geologist were just not so about climate change. And I set out to seek the truth, and we hear conflicting things on both sides going back and forth. Without doing the research, you just don't know what's factual and what's fake news. And that's really what led. And the upshot of this is that I was frankly shocked at just about everything we're being told about climate change, and it's changing, is 180 degrees from what we're being told. The actual facts, science, and data tell us that, and it's crazy. It really is.
And we're told,
that's really what led to the book.
Sure, and we're told that about 98% supposedly of scientists have bought into, you know, climate change, the global warming message that's man-made. Is that true, about 98%? If it is true, then that would mean you're only part of one, you're only part of 2% of the scientists that don't agree.
Absolutely not. The main gist, where that really comes from was a study done by a fellow by the name of Cook a few years ago, and he had a team of his radical climate alarmist people from the website that he runs. They went through and looked at a little over 11,000 articles and papers that were peer reviewed, and to determine if they supported what they called the consensus opinion on climate change. And the consensus opinion would be that man-made emissions, primarily CO2, are driving temperatures higher and then to unprecedented, unusual levels, and it's primarily human caused. And it will lead to catastrophic results. But he had five categories of what you believed. Using his classifications, I would be part of the 97%. Oh. Why is that? Because, number one, and this, your listeners need to understand some of this, CO2 has been increasing since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, but primarily since the mid-40s. The CO2 that's being added to the atmosphere is from primarily, overwhelmingly, from human causes and mostly burning of fossil fuels. I grant that. I grant those two things. And I also grant that increase in CO2 necessarily has to be warming the atmosphere to some degree, although I would argue that it's quite modest and greatly overwhelmed by the same natural forces that have been driving temperatures since the dawn of time. And these are... It's incredible, these people, and he would include me on that 97% consensus. I would be one of those, as would most of my fellow skeptics. Hmm. So it would be as if, there's an analogy I've heard and I like to use. It would be an analogy saying that there's a 97% consensus that abortion on demand is okay. And if you include, now to get there, you'd have to say that including that 97%, anyone who is opposed to abortion in all cases except to save the life of the mother, okay? You might be able to get to 97% there on the abortion question if you did that and then include people completely opposed to abortion. And they're really just manipulating data. And so, no, that 97% consensus is not near. And as a geologist, I know very few geologists that believe that the warming temperatures we've seen over the last 150 years are driven primarily by man. And because we tend to look at things in a much longer time frame than most people, and that's really what's needed in this debate. Well, not just too many times the climate alarmists look at tens of decades of temperature, maybe 100 years of data. Or you really need to put this into many hundreds, many thousands or millions of years to look at the where what's happening today and where does it fit into what's happened in the past. And that's really what's one of the big things in the book, is taking that longer-term perspective. And it really, really colors the perspective you use, colors what your analysis and your conclusions will be.
Okay, you have, just so people know about this book, Inconvenient Facts, there's 60 inconvenient facts, and I'll just highlight a couple here. Carbon dioxide is not the primary greenhouse gas. The warming effect of CO2 declines as its concentration increases. Then you deal with carbon dioxide, the foundation of life, the food of planets. First and foremost, CO2 is plant food. And that's an important point. And you go on and on and on with example after example, 60 different inconvenient facts. Now, let me give a modern-day example. Right now, we've seen in recent weeks these fires out of control in California, and several different people have been blaming climate change for that. Oh, we're seeing all these terrible fires out of control. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, you've got it wrong. It's not just several people. It seems like everybody is blaming the fires on climate change. Jerry Brown, the governor, has been, you know, he calls it the new normal. And they're directly linking these problems to climate change. But if you look, and in the book, I have a chapter devoted to forest fires, and we see, and it's not me. I go back to the experts from the Canadian Fire Service, National Interagency Fire Center from the United States. These people, their documentation show that forest fires or wildfires have been in a long-term, 100-plus year decline across the Northern Hemisphere. And this is completely contrary to what we're being told or hearing in the media. We see that in the United States, there were nearly three times as many fires back in the 20s and 30s than there are today, and nearly six times as much acreage burned in the United States as what we see today. We also see a long-term, huge study of Northern Hemisphere forest fires dating back to the to 1900, looking to the 20th century and 10 years into this century, showing just a significant long-term decline. Significantly, a lot of these experts attribute it to climate change. And your listeners are going to go, they're probably saying, huh, what? I've never heard that. Doesn't warming temperatures mean a drier soil? It doesn't, actually, as it turns out, because as the atmosphere warms, it can incorporate more water vapor. The warmer the atmosphere, the warmer the temperature, the more water vapor, which then leads to more precipitation, which leads to an increase in soil moisture. And then it's backstopped by increasing CO2, which increases the CO2 fertilization effect. And because of the CO2 fertilization effect, it means that the plants don't need as much soil moisture. So those two things working in tandem are leading to an increase in soil moisture content around the world. Your listeners have never heard that. That's not in the media. That's not out there. And if they don't believe me, they can go Google NASA greening and Sahara, or just NASA and greening, and see what NASA says. According to NASA, up to 50% of the world, of the earth, is greening. In other words, vegetation's increasing. Only 4%, according to NASA, when you look on that site, is what they call browning, or loss of vegetation. Hmm. Completely opposite, again, 180 degrees of what we're being told. We're being told that the earth is, desertification is occurring, that it's turning into a vast desert. But yet, again, Google NASA and greening. You'll see that and see what NASA says about the Sahara. There's a 300,000 square kilometer area in the Sahel, the southern Sahara, that's turning into a lush grassland. People and animals are moving back in there that haven't lived there in over 1,000 years. Gazelles, even amphibians, are moving back into the area. Isn't that a good story? Mm. That's a great, great story that should be on the front page of the New York Times. You'll never see it there.
It doesn't fit
the
narrative.
They don't want you to know this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, why is that? Why all the pushing the sky is falling, the catastrophe story?
Well, you know, when we talk about this, It sounds like you ought to be wearing a tinfoil hat, because it's got to be a grand global conspiracy. But, I mean, what is it? If you look at the science, the facts, and the data, and you hear me say this a few times, it tells a completely different story. Forest fires are a great example. Why is it? I start my book, I open the book up with a quote from H.L. Mencken, who stated famously the need for governments and institutions to create these imaginary, what he called hobgoblins of alarm, with which they needed to frighten the population, because they needed the civilians and the citizens to be terrified enough of whatever it is they're making up, that they'll gladly accept these onerous and painful regulations like a carbon tax or the Paris Climate Accord or something like that. Well, who in their right mind is going to want to impose economically crippling sanctions like would be if we went in with the Paris Climate Accord? Who would want that? Well, the only way you do it is if you can convince everybody that calamity is right around the corner, that tragedy is going to happen if we don't do it, and everybody's going to die. And what about the children? And these are the things for, you know, it's a, what is it, global governance? Is it a way for more taxes to be imposed, regulations to be imposed, freedoms to be lost? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know what the science is telling me, and it's got to be exposed. It's incredible every day. I mean, I'm kind of living and breathing it, but the stuff that I read every day that's out there in the newspapers and just stated as fact. And again, we go back, forest fires are a great, great, great example. And even if we look at California itself, CAL FIRE, C-A-L FIRE, CAL FIRE administers all things fire-related in California. And if you go to their website, they've got some great graphs there. They do show that the high mountainous areas are mostly deep woodland that are administrated by the U.S. Forest Service. You do see decades-long, last 20, 30, 40 years, where there's been an increase in fires there, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But the vast area of California that's administered by CAL FIRE has shown a many decades-long, I'm talking 80, 90-year decline of forest fires for that parts of California. And as for where we see the increase in fire in California, last year the director of CAL FIRE stated that one of the contributing factors to that was mismanagement of the forest. He stated last year, he hasn't done it yet this year. I think somebody got to him and said, wait a minute, you know, we need to talk about climate change. You just shut up about mismanagement of the forest, because he hasn't said anything like that this year. Mm. But last year he stated that during the fire season that there were 4 to 5 times as many trees per acre as what he thought a properly managed forest should have. So what does that do? Each tree is competing for that soil moisture we just talked about. If you have 4 to 5 times as many trees, all those trees are competing for the same soil moisture, so it actually exacerbates already dry and drought-stricken conditions. Plus, it just adds more fuel to the fire when it does become. So it becomes more intense. Mismanagement of the forests are one part of that in terms of more forest fires. But, you know, as I'm standing, I'm in right now where I'm talking to you from my home in Pittsburgh, and less than a mile from here, there's a fire tower on top of a hill. Well, there's fire towers all over much of the East. No one I've talked to can ever remember a forest fire in Pennsylvania.
We have 15 seconds left.
No one's.
Yeah.
Okay. And but yet, back in the 20s and 30s, they were common. So yes, there's. In the time we have left, I'd like to empower your listeners. I'm providing a PowerPoint of figures from the book at the website inconvenientfacts.xyz. If they hit the subscribe button, I'll send them a link for that.
Great.
Again, it's inconvenientfacts.xyz.
All right, and your Twitter handle is @GWrightStone. Gregory Wrightstone, again, the book is called Inconvenient Facts. Thank you so much for being with us, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye now.